Hey there, foreigners! This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is the man whose tagline I shamelessly copied. He runs a site called Mixergy, where proven entrepreneurs teach. He is Andrew Warner, and he's going to teach us today how to be a networking ninja. Andrew, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Ah, good to have you on here.
Yeah, I'm so
sorry. Good to have you on here. I'm an interviewer, so I'm so used to welcoming somebody on my interview. It's good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So glad. I'm so excited to have you and a bit nervous as well, to be honest.
By the way, it must be weird for the audience to hear that you're talking to someone, like you're doing a show of foreigners, and here I am coming on as Andrew Warner. I should, full disclosure, tell people, I was so embarrassed as a kid that my last name was a foreign-sounding name.
That was exactly my first question.
Were you going to launch into it?
Yes, so go for it.
That's exactly what was on my mind.
Yes.
My last name was Khalili, and I used to say, oh, so foreign, and I look so dark, and so on, and I changed it when I was making sales calls, and sure enough, people were paying more attention to me when my name was Warner, Andrew Warner. The full name is made up. And so I finally changed it legally to Andrew Warner.
Okay, so you actually went through the legal change, and you were saying that you did see a change in other people's behavior with you.
Yeah, I think actually times have changed. Back then, we're talking about 15, 20 years ago, the foreign-sounding name just was a turnoff for people. They weren't used to foreigners. They were used to only people who are white, American, middle-of-the-road people on television, in sales. Everybody else was in the computer room or doing something dorky but not interacting with customers. So if I would call up and I would say my name, I would say Khalili, and I could hear that people would just tune it out. Yeah. I don't think that's true anymore.
Yeah, I would agree. Things are getting better, definitely. So when I look at you and when I see you interact with other people or in your interviews, you sound like a natural to me, right? So was there ever a time when you had to struggle to make connections with other people?
I was the biggest dork, so shy in the worst way. The only thing I had was a burning desire to do something big with my life, but I was incredibly shy in school. I'll give you one. Even after I started my company and I was the CEO of my own company, I had employees and everything. I remember once taking, I think it was a cab into Manhattan, standing across the street from the Puck building, looking at the Puck building and saying, there's a networking event that I came all this way to go into. And I was there with a coworker of mine, and she said, yeah. And I said, well, but we're a little bit late, so maybe we shouldn't go in. And she said, yeah, it is a little bit late, and who knows if it's a good fit for us. And we were just standing there talking back and forth, talking ourselves out of going to this networking event. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we said, all right, we probably shouldn't go. And we turned back around and went back home to Queens because, not that we were late, there's no such thing as being late to a networking event. It's because I was so nervous about going out and talking to other people that I couldn't get myself to go in there. And I talked myself out of it and talked her out of it, and we walked out and we missed it. And I missed lots of great opportunities like that in my life before I did some of what we'll talk about here on this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So you actually were, you know, nervous about this also, but once you realized that and changed it, what has that done for you?
You know what? I realized that I was nervous around it, and I realized the value of doing something about it. And that's when things started to change. And I'll give you an example of one time where it changed. I remember once I went to a meeting in Soho in Manhattan. And on my way out, I was ready to go back home, sit at my desk, and I heard this guy, Michael Sorensi, say, guys, I got to go. I'm running late. And I heard him tell people why he had to rush out. He said, look, I've got an appointment to look at a rental place uptown, and if I don't make it, they're going to rent it to somebody else. I'm late already. I got to get out of here. And in my head, I was so nervous about doing what I wanted to do, but I just said, let's go for it. And I said, Michael, I can give you a ride. I'm going back to Queens. It's on my way. Now, uptown is not on the way back home to Queens, but I said, let's do it. He gets in the car with me, and I'm immediately nervous. What if I don't know what to say to him? What if it's not a good ride? But we're chatting. And then I say, all right, we're chatting. What if it's a waste of time? Shouldn't I be working? Why am I just chatting? This is business. It's not social. What's wrong with you, Andrew? But we were in the car, so I couldn't just kick him out. And so I just kept talking. And at the end, we get to this place. It was like on 70th and something. He gets out of the car. He says, thanks for the ride. And just before he leaves, he says, by the way, I know you're trying to get sponsors for your site. Well, there's this company called LifeMinders. They've been sponsoring us and paying us a lot. I could introduce you to them and they'll buy ads from you. And he goes, all right, goodbye. And as he walked out, I was just sitting there stunned going, huh, this guy just handed me one of his biggest sponsors and he's going to make an introduction and I'm going to be able to get them. And we eventually did get this. I never heard of LifeMinders before this meeting. Now I heard about them and we eventually got them as a sponsor. They were the first people to give us a check for more than $7,000. Before that, that was the highest. And their check, I think at first was for like $270,000, maybe $300,000. Then they gave me my first check over $1 million for advertising. And it's all because I pushed away from my desk, sucked it up, and had a conversation with another human being. And as a result of that, I now do that all the time. I get to know people. It's really helpful.
Yeah. So that's a great story. So how long did they continue to be sponsors for you?
Oh, they were sponsors right up until the end.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is for your earlier
first company. Yep.
I see. Okay. Got it. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you was that you mentioned your last name, Khalili, right? Like, what is your lineage like? Where are your parents from originally?
My family's from all over the Middle East. We're real mutts in that sense. Khalili itself as a last name is Persian.
Persian. Okay.
So from Iran.
So your parents are first generation immigrants?
Yes.
I see. Okay. So we can launch right into the different steps that you recommend for building a strong network. The first one that I have here is very interesting. It's taking people to exotic places, right? So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is one that I'd suggest working up to because this isn't an easy one, but it's a fun one and it's really worth doing. And we'll talk about the easier ones too. I got burned out recently or close to burned out and I just couldn't keep coming back into the same office doing the same old thing. And someone invited me to Napa for dinner, Jason Gaynard from Mastermind Talks. And I thought, you know, instead of working out of my office all day and then driving up to Napa, let's go to Napa. And I drove and it was beautiful. And I was just sitting there working and it was so inspiring. And I got better work done than I did when I'm sitting at my desk. And I went to dinner with him, had a good dinner and came back home with a new realization. The realization was go to inspiring places and work for the day. And so sometimes I drive to Napa. I live in San Francisco, so it's only about an hour away. Other times I would just go to the nicest, most expensive hotel in the whole city. That's really important. The most expensive and the nicest hotel in the city. And I'd sit and work there on my own. And I got so much better work done. They pamper you in these nice hotels. They give you space to sit and work. And you're inspired by seeing all the other people who are doing things. And then I started inviting people to come along with me to these trips. Saying, hey, do you want to come sit with me at this hotel? I'm just going to be doing some work. It inspired me. Do you want to do it? And I was so, for some reason, I thought nobody would be interested in it. A lot of people are. They love working from new places. They love the adventure of it. And so I've been doing that over and over again. I'll give you an example. Actually, not that much. Maybe five people. I still have been doing it mostly on my own because I like having my own space. But there was a guy I was talking to earlier today. He's an incredible marketer. I've known about him for years. I had a great conversation with him and I wanted to learn a little bit more. But I couldn't say, hey, Mike, can I sit in your office and learn from you? I couldn't say, Mike, can I come and watch you do your work? Can I ask you questions for an hour? So instead, what I said was, hey, Mike, I'm going to be going to Napa on Monday. Do you want to drive up there with me? We'll both sit in this inspiring place and work. And, you know, we can chat a little bit more. But mostly it's there for work. I go there to really work and be productive in an inspiring environment. He said, no, I can't. And I thought, oh, maybe this is a dorky idea after all. He said, I can't because I'm going to, I think, Wisconsin or something next week. But he goes, the following week, I'm coming back. Can we schedule it right now for then? I said, I'm not sure. He goes, how about if we just put something down on our calendars and we could always change it later? He was that excited about it. And it is exciting to go away from the office. And now the drive gives us an opportunity to get to know each other, not to just do straight up business, but to get to know each other, to see how we work. Once we get there, we might look at each other's work processes, see what we've done by checking out each other's computers, and then go back and work. It's a good idea. It's really helped me.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, it's something that you may have to build up to. And what is something that is, I have something easy here as a next item here, which is sending cards. What is that?
Oh, super idea. You're right. That is one of the easiest things. I've got this stack of cards right here. I had them printed up at a letterpress shop. There's a company called Aardvark in Los Angeles that does this inspiring, incredible work. So here you can see my address on it. I asked for something very basic. And I just keep a stack of envelopes, and there's another card box like this of cards, so that if there's someone I want to send a quick thank you note to, I can do it. And thank you notes don't take up that much time, unlike email, where if you send someone an email, you could get back a ton of messages from them, and it just becomes this big set of to-dos. With a handwritten letter that just says, hey, thanks for whatever, the person gets this really good feeling, and there isn't a lot of work for either of us. Yeah. And I know that people love it. I know I love it so much that as much as I toss everything out, when someone sends me a thank you note about my work, or I'll cover up their address, I save them. I got them. And
oh, okay. Well, so you have all the cards.
Well, you know, there's like something special about getting something in the mail that you really like.
Yeah, what is it? Like, I've never sent or received cards, so it's hard to connect to it. Like, I will try it immediately for sure. But what is special about
that's what it is. It's that none of us ever does it anymore.
Okay.
It's also something that goes back to what Tim Ferriss said to me when I first interviewed him. I asked him, look, you're a guy who came out of nowhere. How is your book a bestseller? No, and how does everyone know you now? And he said, every channel online is flooded. What that means is you go to Twitter and you're flooded with messages from lots of people. You go to your inbox, you're flooded with messages from lots of people. You go into Skype. I know my Skype even gets now lots of messages. Because the one channel that's empty, that's not really, that's not crowded at all, is in person. And so he would go in person to meet people, to events. Yeah. Well,
that brings us to the next point, which is go outside your room. Beyond online, go in person, right?
Yeah. And now in person is still a little bit more crowded, but not that much. The mail is really uncrowded. I get hardly anything in the mail that's personal anymore. It's all bills and stuff like that. If I get something that's personal, it suddenly stands out. And it doesn't take that much and it doesn't cost that much. So it's an easy win to have. Yeah. Having said that, the challenge with mail is you need to find someone's address, and it's not that hard to find. I go to do a Whois search on their website, or I look on people's sites for their address. Another challenge is there's still a chance that I send out a thank you note and the person doesn't even check their mail anymore, because it's kind of an old-fashioned thing to check your mail.
Yeah.
But I figure if I don't think I even lose 50% of the letters. I believe that more than 80% of people actually open their mail, because it's so important to go through your mail. They may not open it this week, but I believe if I say within the next 4 months, 100% of the people who I send a card to will get that card. And so it has incredible reachability.
Yeah. So who has been one of the persons who was exceptionally thankful or surprisingly responded to when you sent a card?
This guy, Raj Daniels, who sent a card to me about one of my guests, about Steve Sims, one of the best guests that I had on Mixergy.
Yeah.
And I just, because I love to scan stuff in, I have a scanner right here. I scanned it in and I shot an email to Steve and I said, look at the card that I got. Steve liked it so much, he asked me for permission to post it on his Facebook page. So then I got to introduce him to Raj Daniels and say, look, he's going to post your thing on his Facebook page. Are you okay with it? What else do you get that somebody is going to post on their Facebook page? I've seen people take my cards and tweet them out because it's such a wacky thing to get something in the mail.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a strange connection right there. So another thing that you do is invite people for dinner. Right?
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
A dinner, I think, is still a step up. It's a little bit harder, I think, to get comfortable with. And the reason is that we feel judged. If I don't just mean dinner out at a restaurant. I like dinner at a house, dinner at my house. And it's challenging because we feel judged by having somebody come over to our house and look around. Mm-hmm. I still think it's worth doing because people are curious about where you live. When you invite someone to your house, even if the place is really dumpy, they feel connected to you in a really meaningful way. Now, I've learned to cook recently, but I don't even recommend cooking. I think you get takeout. You invite them over and say, do you want to come over for takeout? Do you want to, right? You're really clear about it. And you invite 5-10 people. If you end up with 4 people around the table with you, it's fantastic.
Okay. And who do you invite for dinner? Like, what? What is your selection criteria? Like, how do you do it?
Goes all over the place for me. My personal preference is to just invite anybody and everyone for dinner. I don't like spending too much time trying to see, is this person going to fit with that person, and trying to make the perfect table. It just takes me too long, and I hate doing the dinner because of that. For me, what I like to do is just say, I'm going to order takeout on Sunday night, and I invite one or two people, and then I say, hey, I've got some friends coming over, really casual for takeout. Do you want to join us?
Okay. So it's just whoever pops up in your head at that time.
Yep.
Yeah, this goes in line with what you said in one of your other interviews, that you don't actually make a concentrated effort to keep in touch. Is that right?
Yep.
How does that work?
Maybe I should. I know some people in my audience use software that helps them know who they need to talk to, how often they need to talk to. In fact, when was it that I interviewed him? I interviewed Chris Johnson, just recorded it 2 days ago. He's a guy who runs a film studio, well, digital film studio, Simplifilm. And he is so methodical. He said, I have this group of people, I think it was like 20 people, who he said give him more than 50% of the referrals in his business. So he uses software to tell him, to remind him every week to contact those people and just say something helpful to them. And then he says, well, I have the next tier down. And for them, every month I send an email. And then he has the next tier down. For them, twice a year he sends them something useful. That's, to me, that's just too much. If I were in sales heavily, I might do that. But to me, I just don't need to do that.
You were in sales heavily at one point, right?
Yeah.
How did you keep in touch then?
Then I did use a heavy CRM process.
Oh, you did.
That okay. Allowed me to stay in touch with people.
Okay. So, one thing is people who help with your business, right? And another thing is people who are interested, like personal connections. They always say that build your network before you need it, mm-hmm. right? So how do you know whom to keep in touch with or whom to not keep in touch with, or, you know?
To me, it's people who I just enjoy, but I understand that most people don't need that, that they need to be more methodical. I do interviews with people who I admire. When I do an interview with them, I get to know them. Mm-hmm. And if I have them over to my house for a dinner, and that's the one time when I really will structure a dinner. If I do people who I've interviewed, I stick with just people who I've interviewed, and I think it creates a really nice environment. And that's all I need. I don't really need to stay that in touch with them. I was thinking maybe I'd like to come up with a way to do it, to stay in touch with them all so that they're all in my world. But it's a lot of work, and I haven't found the right way to do it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is one of the other things, right? So you have some request or an ask at one point. If you're an interviewer, or you talked about your friend who is a digital marketer, and how do you make a conversation, or how do you connect when you don't have anything, any agenda per se, right? So I find it very hard. I'm just meeting this person for lunch, and I need nothing from him, and I don't know if he needs anything from me. So how do you go face that situation?
And the reason that you're getting to know them is so that one day in the future you might want to work with them?
They sound interesting, and they're doing good work, and
what I do is I ask questions about what I'm curious about with their work, mm-hmm. but that might be too much. That might not be helpful enough for them. I see the challenge there. So then what I suggest is invite not just that one person to lunch or to an event, but have three or four other people with you.
Okay.
So they get to know each other.
Okay. So and, the pressure is off of you.
Yeah. Right, and then especially if you're reaching for somebody who is further ahead in business than you are by far, and you don't have much that you can help them with. I think actually that there's stuff that anyone could help each other with, but it's still a little bit hard. If someone's like a hero of yours and you don't just want to take up their time, but you want to keep the conversation interesting and you're not sure how to do it on your own, I think inviting two or three people who are further ahead together and have them meet each other and get to know you, I think that's an easier way to do it. It takes a lot of pressure off, and it gives them an event that they could feel proud for having gone to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I think about when I get more than one or two people who don't know each other together,
yeah,
is how do I make it interesting for everybody? What if they get bored with each other, right?
And let's get more specific. What's an example of what you want to do?
You suggest, so when I get, like one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, you recommend getting personal with the people that you invite over for dinner, right? Like, tell me about that. What does getting personal mean?
Getting personal means is that I don't want to have a conversation with someone at my house where we talk about the kind of stuff that would be on their blog or LinkedIn profile. I want to get into the depths of who they really are. Mm-hmm. And by getting personal, I mean looking for opportunities to ask them about things that they wouldn't talk about outside of a private dinner or private drinks or private event.
What is an example of a question that you would ask someone?
Well, when they lost their virginity.
Okay.
And I know this sounds a little weird, so you don't just pop this stuff up, but another one would be, did you date a lot in high school? What else do I want to know about them? I might want to know about, I want to know who they've frankly ripped off, or I want to know when they're really scared. You know, those are things that they don't really talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I look for opportunities to bring stuff like that up. Uh-huh. Like if someone's talking about their girlfriend right now or that they're not dating right now, I use that as an opportunity to say, well, were you always dating? Like, were you someone who used to date a lot in high school? And now we've gotten into someplace personal. We're talking about personal relationships. It really bonds people. I like the personal stuff, the non-work stuff, especially because it creates this sense of knowing each other and knowing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So would you have to, like, if I get personal with someone, what I'm worried about is, so I'm ripping them bare in front of these other two people, right? So how do you counter that?
Yeah, you know what? That's an important thing. The people do feel like you're just sucking them dry of personal information, right?
Exactly.
Tucker Max said that to me when I told him this exact same thing that you said to me. And he said, you know, you don't want to be a vampire for emotion. You're not there to just suck them dry of it. So one of the things I do is, I share some of my stuff too.
Okay.
So if I ask them, did you get to date a lot in high school? I say, well, you know what? The reason I'm asking is because you seem so freaking confident right now. You're dating three women right now. Is that what you're telling me? Or you're on Tinder, whatever it is that brought it up.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying is because I didn't date much in high school. It used to really frustrate me that I was so freaking awkward. And I used to read business books all the time saying that one day I'm going to be so successful that I won't have to break out of this shell. Women will just come up to me because they want to know who I am and what I've done.
So did that happen, Andrew?
That totally happened, yeah. And if I share that, then I think some people, I like to think that people see some of themselves in my experience. Mm-hmm. They rarely do, so maybe I'm a little bit of a freak. But what they do, though, see is somebody who's willing to be open too, and that creates an environment where they want to be open. We all want to be open about our stuff. We all want the world to see what we're going through, what we're trying to do, what we stand for.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I see you do a lot and very well is keeping in touch with your fans, right?
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
It's really tough to do because I think one-on-one emails
and you're not an online guy also, right? Like you're not out there on Facebook all the time, Twitter on all the time.
I was. You know what? I really, really was. And I'm just losing patience with it. I don't think it's giving me enough value. And it's taking up a lot of my time. And I like to, at least this year, I really wanted to spend more time internally thinking and being more aware of what I want to do with my life, who I want to be. I'd rather sit in Napa and read and write something that's going to be meaningful than post another Facebook post. It's just a temporary thing that I'm going through. But what I do like is getting to know my customers, getting to know my audience, getting to know people in my world. And the way that I do it is if there's someone who's local, I invite them to Scotch. And every Thursday up until the summer, every single Thursday, I've had an ongoing Scotch night where we'd have 3 to 4 people, sometimes frankly, even one other person with me having Scotch and talking. And that in-person conversation is priceless. And then I would do things like schedule phone calls one-on-one with people because I think when we're in one-on-one phone calls, we get into the depth of our challenges. I was just talking to a guy right now who set a goal for himself of having this new business of his do well by mid-October. We're about a month away from it now and less actually. And he was talking through what he's going through. That's really helpful for me to understand what's the mindset of my customer.
Okay. So you reach out to people, or are people reaching out to you and you pick them up on whatever they have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Both. So you pick the, okay.
Both. If I see someone who I think is interesting at a party, this is something that I learned earlier on, that when I was dating, frankly, I don't always want to invite someone out to on a date. If I was out at a party and I met someone, it's kind of weird to say, hey, do you want to go out for dinner all the time? And then I'm not sure I even want to go out for dinner with them. I'm not sure I even want to go out for drinks. And if they're really interesting, they may not even know me yet well enough, and I can't win them over enough to get that date. So what I would do is I would organize parties and I'd say, hey, do you want to come out to this party of mine? It takes away a lot of pressure. And they come over, I've organized this party, we get to know each other. Maybe I don't even want to ever date them, but I've gotten to know them through the party, and that tells me that I don't want to date them. So what I do now is I have an ongoing Thursday scotch night, and I invite people over. Do you want to come over for scotch? It's simple as that.
Yeah. So all of these things that you mentioned, do they help you land guests as well for your interviews?
Yeah, actually, sometimes it does.
Who was like the toughest one for you to get hold of or land on your site? Mm-hmm.
The toughest ones happened years ago when we were starting. Uh-huh. And I can't think of someone who was especially hard. Like Fred Wilson was especially hard, but there was a fan in my audience who introduced me to him. The fan happened to work in the same building as Fred Wilson. And so he went and said, hey, you should do this Mixergy interview. And so Fred Wilson did it. Okay. He's a venture capitalist. I don't think I have anything specific that comes direct. Like, I intentionally try not to care about that. Mm-hmm. When I was in Washington, D.C., I was living there a few years ago. I'd invite people out for drinks. And inevitably, because of who I am, I would pay for everyone's drinks. And I remember going home after one of them saying, why am I paying for everyone's drinks? It cost me $80. By the way, Washington, D.C. drinks are so inexpensive compared to San Francisco or New York or L.A. where I've lived. So I go, $80 for like seven people to go out for drinks, and I paid for it all. Then I remember the next day, someone signed up for Mixergy Premium at the annual level, one of the guys who came out to dinner, which is a $200 membership. And I said, why am I worried about being a sucker? You know, it comes back if I don't – I shouldn't overstress it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But having said that, I also prefer not doing drinks at a bar. I think scotch night should be at your office, should be at someone's office who you know, who you say, hey, do you want to do scotch night at your place? And then you start inviting people. It could be at your house. It shouldn't be.
Why is that? Because it's more personal?
It's much more personal. And actually, you can give people a better experience, because if you're going out to a bar or a restaurant, it's often going to be loud. If you do it at your office and you have even a tiny little bit of space, it's quiet and it's your space. It's also cheaper. So I'll give you an example. Again, I don't want to overstress the cost, but it's still important.
Yeah.
If I were to take three people out for drinks here in San Francisco, each of us might have two drinks. Each drink, including tip, might be $10.
Yeah.
Right? So we're talking $60 just for drinks. That's not unusual. Meanwhile, for $27, I could buy a really nice bottle of scotch. Three guys are not going to finish a full bottle of scotch. But let's say we did. Actually, I can't even say we did. There's no way. So let's say it's $15 there. Yeah. I buy some nice cheese, another $7. I buy some crackers. I buy some – I love edamame. That's still under $30. And we have this quiet experience where I'm hosting, and it's a much nicer, more personal experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the costs are important, especially when you're starting out, right? Like I, for example, don't want to spend a lot of money taking people out for drinks. So it'll be exceptionally valuable for me. So you mentioned while you're answering this question about being on social media,
Let me ask you this before we get to social media. Scotch, I don't know where you work, but is it the kind of thing that you can do at your office?
Yeah, absolutely. I work from my home, but yeah, that is something that I could definitely do.
Where is your place?
Yeah, I'm in San Jose.
San Jose. So are there people who are local to you in San Jose? I want to see how possible it is for you. Because you're in the Bay Area, I know that people in the Bay Area – If they don't live within 3 miles of each other, they tend to just be dismissive of getting together, where any other city, 3 miles would be nothing.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So I have a couple of guests who live within stone's throw, right, from me. So yeah, I do have my guests who live very close by.
People you've interviewed.
Yeah, who I have interviewed.
Okay.
And actually, on that note, can I come to your Scotch night, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Next Thursday, we're going to do Scotch night here at the office. Come on over.
Yeah, I would love it.
We're going to do it at 5:30.
Okay, sounds good. I'll be there. So my question was actually not about social media. So you talked about this time where you went off, or right now you don't want to be engaged in social media a lot, and you're going to Napa trying to figure it out yourself, right? And I've heard you state similar things in many other scenarios also. One of the times that I remember was, I forget the interview, this was about productivity. You said you were trying to be very dominant in your mastermind group, and you went to a retreat, and for 10 days you connected your phone with a keyboard and you tried to figure it out all by yourself. Right. So is there something that you do often trying to
That was one of the most helpful, probably the most helpful trip away that I did. Yeah. I like to go on thinking trips.
Yeah.
And
the reason I brought it up is because I was very scared of networking, and I did some work on myself going into the depths of why I was scared.
What'd you come up with?
And I was scared that people were not interested in talking to me. So all that I do right now is every morning, again, I'm feeling a bit nervous about saying this, but every morning I say to myself that people are interested in talking to me for 10 seconds or 30 seconds. I repeat that. And it has done something strange for me, right? Like, I'm more comfortable naturally in talking to people. So like, how is doing personal work important in going out there and working better with other people?
Me, it was tremendously important. In that specific time, what I remember sitting there thinking is, I had this list of questions and nothing else to do. There was no phone reception there. I was on a meditation retreat. There was no television, obviously. I didn't even drive over there. So I was dropped off, and I was pretty much stuck on this meditation retreat where people weren't talking because they were in deep meditation.
Yeah, was it a Vipassana retreat?
It was Ananda.
Okay.
Ananda.
Yeah.
And one of my questions is, why was I being such a jerk to people? And I just kept writing and writing and writing. And one of the things I realized was that when someone would say something, I would disagree with them. When they eventually agreed with me, I would change my position just a little bit because I wasn't happy with the way they agreed with me because I thought they didn't fully get it. And then I would be upset that they didn't change their minds to the new approach that I just said. And I would just keep doing that to people. And I said, why? And I realized it's because when I had my first company, I had something to evangelize, something to stand for. We believed in co-registration. We believed in online greeting cards. We believed in email marketing. We believed in all these things, I and my company did. And if someone didn't get it, I had something to proselytize, something to convince them of, something to argue with them about, or to think that they were stupid for not getting. And then after the company, I was just hanging out. And I still like to have people think that I was smart. And so I would say something, and no one would really argue with me with the first position because they thought, Andrew did this thing with his first company, he must know everything. So they'd agree with me. And then I didn't like that they agreed with me so quickly. And so I changed my mind just a little bit, or changed the way I said it just a little bit, and just keep bouncing them around until they didn't agree with me so that I would argue. And the only way I could get to that realization was by sitting down and saying, what's going on? What are you doing? And so that's what I did.
How long it took you to get there? Just the retreat portion?
I would wonder
how long it took you to realize that you're doing it, right? So that would have been harder thing, I think.
You know what? I must have realized it for a long time, but not fully. It was when I said, I have this opportunity. I have this perfect retreat, just like what I envisioned. I finally found it online and I'm going there. Let's not waste it. I said, what do I want to think about while I'm there? And then I wrote a list of questions and they all came to me pretty fast.
I see. So one of the things that I realized recently on a camping trip last weekend is I tend to look down on people who are in a specific skill. If I'm at an advanced stage than them,
yep.
I tend to look down on them. and it comes off very easily. And the other day I was playing volleyball and I was playing with some beginners. I was not saying a word out of my mouth, but I was still dissing people.
Because you were so much better than they were.
Yeah, just in that
sense. So why do you think you do that?
I don't know. It was a very recent realization and I'm still yet to figure out, I would say. I think being competitive, being good was very important for me when I was growing up. And I was in a small town. I grew up in a small town in India. And what took me apart from my peers was that I was better
uh-huh.
skill, right? So that made me, I think, feel like that is the most important thing for me. But just because you're good at in a skill doesn't mean you're good as a person, right? Actually, I'm horrible as a person.
Really? And are you feeling now that that you don't get that credit from the outside world and so you need to ask them for it? You need to have them realize that you're better in something? Why do you think that suddenly you're looking at things like volleyball and looking down on people who aren't as good as you?
Why am I doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, it may be establishing dominance or supremacy or whatever, right? Like to stand out within that social group.
Okay. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But I still want to find out why that's coming up now, because you really don't care that much about volleyball, right? And there's a reason why you're comparing yourself to other people in volleyball and looking down on them in volleyball. Maybe there's some other area that you're feeling like you're not getting enough praise.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So or you're not doing as well as you like. I don't know. I don't want to play a podcast analyst with you, but that's the kind of stuff that I get to think about when I go to sit in Napa or when I go to sit in Paris has been great for me for that. In fact, because I have a kid now, one of my big challenges was I can't just take off and go to a meditation retreat for 10 days out of the blue. I can't go off to Paris and sit there for a week. And I was starting to bum out. And then when I discovered I could take day trips to Napa, spend hours there just writing or reading or whatever, then it helped. By the way, I did actually write something about the very topic that we're talking about, which is like, what's the stuff that's going in our heads?
Uh-huh.
The insecurities, what it leads to. It's not fully done.
You wrote a blog post?
I just wrote it in Google Docs.
Okay.
I'd love to link anyone who's listening to us here to this Google Doc. I'm going to find a way to do it right now.
I will link to it at breakingtheborders.com/Andrew. Right? Andrew's talk. I'll link to that.
Okay.
To that hyperlink.
Breakingtheborders.com/Andrew's doc.
Yeah. AndrewsDoc. Doc.
Okay.
Okay. Great. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way, Andrew?
Number one, I'd love it actually if I'm going to turn comments on this Google Doc. If they just add a comment to the doc with any feedback, that'd be helpful. Yeah. And then otherwise, I'd love for them, if they heard this, to come to Scotch with you. It doesn't have to be next week. Next week is not enough time. But if they've heard this and they want to come to Scotch, they could come with you here in San Francisco. I'm at 201 Mission Street.
Okay.
That means I get two for one, both them and you.
Yeah. You make it more than two.
I'd love it. Good.
Good. So thank you so much, Andrew, for doing this.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again and have an amazing day.